to PNC C-Speak, the language of executives. I'm Carolyn Jones, market president and publisher of the Boston Business Journal. Joining me today as co-host is Saskia Epstein, senior vice president of client and community relations at PNC Bank in New England.
Thanks so much, Carolyn. It's so great to be with you here on PNC C-Speak. Each podcast features local executives talking about relevant and timely business topics. This knowledge-sharing platform showcases leaders with forward-thinking approaches that disrupt the status quo and cause us to think differently.
Our guest today is Herbie DuVernay, whom the BBJ named as one of its 2021 Power 50 Movement Makers, a list comprised of community leaders whose work and actions are helping to shape a more equitable Boston. Herbie is the CEO of Windwalker Group and founder and CEO at Rise Together.
Welcome.
Thank you both. Thank you for having me.
I wonder if we can just start by talking a little bit about the Power 50 list and your work as a movement maker.
Thank you. First of all, I must tell you that I was shocked to be one of these Power 50 people because I realized that so many of us are doing a tremendous amount of work. But also being among these 50 people who I believe touching the lives of people are incredible. And I think that's what I was kind of surprised to even be a part of that Power 50 list, because I was like, wow, especially going to 53 years old, you're like realizing like, wow, I guess I'm doing something good, and seeing people recognize this, that was kind of an honor. But at the same time, it was just shocking things for me because I do believe many of these people on that list were very incredible people. And I think my view in general about that list is the fact that I always look at things sort of in a very simple and complex kind of way. And I say complex because I think sometimes in our mind, in our intellectual mind, we want to make them feel complex. But in reality, it's simple. Is every single one of these people that was part of that list, you know, their work resolving around people. We are resolving around solving some kind of issues or making people's life better, which I kind of really like. You know, I like that a lot. And I was really honored to be a part of that list. And again, really thank you for being a part of that list. I don't know what to say more on that.
We're going to hear more about why, I think, as we get into the...
Yeah, Herbie, so well-deserved. And you're so modest. Tell us a little bit. One of the reasons why I know you were recognized is because of your founding of Rise Together, a minority-owned development firm with the goal of connecting residents and businesses to foster growth and development in Boston. Tell us a little bit about that. What was your inspiration for that? And for our listeners, you know, shed some of the modesty, pull back the curtains and let us see what led you to found multiple organizations.
Thank you. I mean, I've been an entrepreneur for a while, since 2012, when I left a company, you know, Massport. I used to work for Massport, so I left Massport to become an entrepreneur. And the thing that struck me, again, I've been on that journey for a long time. And 3 years ago, when we founded Rise Together with my two partners, Jim Grossman and Brian Anderson, you know, we were doing a lot of thinking, especially myself and Jim. Jim and I, we think and talk a lot about how we create wealth, you know, not just for us, but also for other people. And then we feel strongly at the time, and part of it is because that's the sectors that Jim came from. He came from the construction sector. We realized that one of the best places to create wealth is through real estate. If you can think back about many of the stories that you probably heard from people that either say, I got married, I was able to buy my first house because of I refinanced my house, or I sent my kids to school by using my real estate. So the linchpin was always about real estate. And if we look at our community, especially the study that came out with the Federal Reserve Bank that talked about the wealth gap between a white family and a black family, you know, make you really think that, you know, many of that has a lot to do with the fact that we don't have any asset. And then for me, having a real estate asset is important. So I wanted to do something deeper than just, you know, enriching ourselves in real estate. We wanted to do something much more and think about real estate in a very different way. And the way we've been thinking about it is saying, okay, what if when we build, we are developing an asset, developing a piece of land. What if we ensure that everyone, as many people as we can, participate in that wealth creation for a long time? Let me give you a quick example. If a person has a mechanic store, you know, a mechanic store, they've been working on it for years. They have, the kids have all gone. Maybe they become an accountant. Maybe they become engineers or whoever, whatever they become. But they move on. They're not a mechanics. So if you have this thing for the past 50, 30, 40 years, you've been building this wealth, in a way, this business, and now you have, you sit on a piece of land. So now you have a couple of ways to exit, at least in the mindset. One is you can stay there for a long time and pass it to the kids, and the kids will say, well, what am I going to do with that? I'm not a mechanic. They're probably going to sell it. Or you're going to sell it yourself. So what we say in that mindset, say, what if we go to the person who's right now occupying this mechanic shop and say, well, what if we come into this space and then build housing development or build a mixed-use complex and have you stay in the deal, help you build wealth, so and at the same time, make sure that there's something that your kids and your grandkids can have for a long time. So that's really the concept. The concept is trying to get to a location where we ensure that the people that own this land be a participant in this opportunity for a long time. And when they do that, not only their kids can come back, their accountant that I spoke about can come back and say, wow, that's something nicer. I may not want to be a mechanic, but I don't mind participate in wealth creation. So that's really what we're doing. We're trying to create wealth in a community where all of us will win. Again, we even take that even more than just that. Instead of the addition to the person, we say, well, what about the community? How do we ensure that the community who's living there participate in that opportunity? They may not be participate in the actual land, but they can participate in the way we make sure the best job they have, workforce development. We can make sure participate there's housing on that complex that's going to be affordable. They can participate by make sure that we have green space within that development so they can be a part of this community. So we feel that in a way we can do something where all of us, you know, win as opposed to just a few of us. So that's really the concept.
You're a bit of a magician because you've made something very complex quite simple, as you were talking about.
Thank you.
and made the invisible, you know, in this case, options for wealth building that might not have been seen and understood by people, made them appear and readily available. So really, really terrific. Thanks for sharing more of that.
Absolutely.
And tell us a little bit about Windwalker.
So Windwalker, our firm that we started since 2012, again, one of the, you know, we started with three people and then now we're almost 200 employees right now. And then we also did an acquisition in 2017 where we bring a training, a portion of the company. So Windwalker, we do security, cyber, physical security, security assessment, and also security guard as well. And then we have also a training component of this. We call it Windwalker XP, which is a human development platform where we help organization really develop people, ensure that people is able to be successful at their workplace. So that product that we just, you know, based on the company that I bought in 2017, we just released that product last year and we're going into the market right now trying to get as many companies as possible to log on. What Windwalker XP is basically is a combination of power skill, which is we call soft skill, power skill, gamification, and micro learning. So basically, we want to combine those three together as a way to give people the ability to be successful at work, at the organization, and so forth.
You have done so much and so many innovative things. We'd love to hear a little more about you. So you came here at 20 years old from Haiti. You spoke little English, and yet you've accomplished so much, and your vision is incredible. Can you share with us a little bit about your personal journey and how that informs some of this great work that you're doing?
Thank you so much. You know, I used to, you know, when I just came here in this country and knowing and learning you know, my upbringing being in Haiti, I spent 20 years, you know, growing up in Haiti, are poor kids in all type of imagination that somehow, sometime you may not be able to think of, just poor. And poor to a point where you were almost one meal at a time. So you never know what your next meal is going to come from. Talk about basic stuff. Not, you know, my kids and I enjoy bikes and sneakers and everything else. We'll talk about now. This is high add-on. We talk about basic stuff that you were just not able to do. And I felt that as I came to this country, realizing how important that piece of my life is to me, to the person that I am right now. And a few years back, you know, when I came here in 1989, I kind of lost that. I'm like, oh, geez, man. You know, I was hiding from it. It's like, oh, you know, I can't believe it. I was that poor. And I realized that was really important to me. And it was important to me because it really teach me about resiliency. It really teach me about how to have a different mindset about opportunity. It really helped me understand that how great this country is. As a matter of fact, really, my patriotism about this country is based on the fact that I was Haitian, based on the fact that I grew up 20 years in Haiti and realized the possibility of this thing. And also that time gave me a chance to understand the power of possibilities. You know, how in this country, you know, I can come from the poorest country of the world and I can make it. And I can every day thinking that tomorrow's going to be better. Every day thinking about that, it's going to be okay. I'm going to make it. And that's really, that's informed me. I had this thing from the point, I think, you know, I will say not just the resiliency piece, the piece about it's going to be okay. I learned that from my mom because as she was struggling to provide to us, she always has this, her face always good with optimism. She always got that optimistic about her that it's going to be okay. It's going to be fine, even though with no light in sight, but she always felt that. So she instilled that into me thinking like, well, we're going to be fine. And that's how my journey came. I came to this country, as you say, no word of English. I didn't speak a word of English. You know, as a matter of fact, you know, when I went to school in Haiti, my path was Spanish, because Spanish is much easier to understand. They give English. I was like, there's no way I can learn that language. So I'm just like very difficult to me as someone who speaks a little bit French and Haitian Creole. I thought that was too hard for me. So I came here and then first I came to New York, spent a year in New York and do all type of job you can think of. Came here to Boston with the opportunity to get more job because at the time in 89, 90s, there was less job in New York than there was in Boston. So I came to Boston to get more opportunity. And basically, you know, it wasn't for school. People say like, well, I came to Boston for school. No, I came for work. And I was doing all kind of work you can think of. I worked for Harvard as a cleaner. Again, Harvard called a custodian, but he was a cleaner. I was cleaning bathroom at each of these dorms and everything else on a daily basis every day. I drive a cab. I was a cab driver in Cambridge, learning the roads and understand when people are speaking to you. Again, all through this journey, I was learning skills. I was learning languages because, again, when you're driving a cab, I mean, you guys, if you took cab before, you understand that. You get to the cab, you say, I need to go to 16th. And you got to figure it out. It's like, and then that was before, you know, I can plug into my phone and say, okay.
Right.
It was none of that. It was like 16th, so you have to say, okay, where is it by? Oh, off my side. Okay, great. What to do. So I get those things and learn all those skills. And I did security guard before. And then I end up going to school, realizing that, you know, again, opportunities in this country was a lot. You know, there's so many things you can do. It's wide open. You know, I get able to get to school. Again, since I was a poor kid and I was able to get financial aid. And it was like, okay, let me take advantage of the opportunity that presented to me and keep pushing. And that's what I did. And I went there. And along the way, and I just got to make that clear, along the way, I always have the opportunity to seek because I didn't have a father figure. someone that to sort of like, hey, I've done it, like I'm doing for my kids. I can tell you the road. So I always seek other people for support, other mentors for support, other people that I know. I say, listen, even to this day in business, and Scott, you know that I got Colette as a support. So I always have a mindset of seek out to other people as a support. So I've done this thing and was very fortunate to understand the power of mentoring, the power of someone, also the power of a lot of people willing to tell you the word. You know, a lot of people don't seem to know that. A lot of people will tell it to you, and you don't have to pay them to do that. They will say, hey, yeah, you want to know? Yeah, I can tell you my experience. And then you take all these experiences from different people and combine them and then really say, okay, this is the world. This is what I'm going to do. I'm going to apply for this job. And when I'm not this job, this is how I'm going to behave at this job to make sure I get to the next position. And that's all. And then exactly the same thing when I wanted to do business. I said, you know what? I'm going to use the skills that I learned. I'm going to get mentors, people that have done business before, and rely on them. So that's really my journey. So I really found to really summarize that is a journey with a building of community around me that's really make me the person that I am right now. So I utilize the community to help me really get to where I'm at by seeking their help, seeking their assistance, reach out to them, tell them the problem I'm going through. And then every day, as I keep growing, as I get more successful, that's been so important to my life. And that's how I am where I am now.
We'd like to talk a little bit about leadership some more, but it seems like we can't have the conversation with just looking at what the last 2 years have been like with this pandemic and has impacted both business and community, you know, in so many ways. And how would you say that those challenges maybe influenced, shifted, or shaped how you lead and kind of how you look at things in business and the community long term? Has that had an impact on you?
Absolutely. 100%. I agree 100%. Absolutely. I think leaders have to understand that, you know, I just had this conversation with someone earlier. We live in a very different time. This country seeing that in a matter of days, really, we get like a week notice, a few days notice, like everything shut down. Everybody's going to be working at home. These countries and everybody's life was like 200 miles per hour. We're going to work, we're driving to work, we're reaching the American dream, like nonstop. You know, this is what we're doing. And then the pandemic happened, and then people have a chance to reflect on where they've been, what are they doing, where they are in their life. And then to make even matters worse, we have inflation. You know, currently. So people are in a very tough time. People are in a very tough time, in a very difficult time. And I think leaders have to show a lot of empathy. I think being the good, you know, and I'm doing a lot of that in my organization that I work for, that we really have to show a lot of empathy. People, we cannot think people are on the same level where they were before the pandemic, because they're not. We can lie to ourselves, pretend they are, they're not. They're just not. You know, if you even look at, you know, I have more friends and people that I know that's having mental health issues than never before. And when I talk to other people, they're saying the same thing as well. So it's just the way it is. So we really have to work with empathy to understand people more, understand where people are in their lives. We have a concept in my firm, in both of my companies, that we have a people first concept. People first concept, which is we really want to do more work internally as an organization to ensure that we always put people at the top of our list, you know?
We know also that you are people first and lead in a sort of people first, purposeful way in the community. You're so engaged with so many organizations, not just the ones you founded. I'm on the board alongside you at the GK Fund, and I know you're involved in many other organizations. Can you share a little bit more from your perspective what the business community needs to be doing beyond embodying the empathy as leaders that you're describing is so critical right now? What can we do in either in your industry and in the business community overall in Boston to help drive equity and access to wealth building and in general for our city?
Yes, a great question. You know, the business initially I started by saying, sometime in my brain, I see complex things very simple. And I see simple things, seems complex, but I realize it's actually simple. You know, it just gotta, like you say, you just gotta be able to see it differently, have a different mindset how to do that. I believe that there's a great opportunity for leaders to lead. You know, there's a great opportunity for many of us to become, make our community the best the community can be. I think of the way you're saying about when George Floyd murder happened, this country have awakening about how inequitable this country is. There's so many inequity, it's kind of crazy. You know, when you sort of understand that, I think the Federal Reserve Bank told us that, but I think many of us kind of read these things like, oh, that must be some great research paper, right? It's not, you know, I can't believe it, but it's for real. And I think I've seen some movement and organization thinking and doing some of this. I think more of that needs to be done. We really need to focus on organization as a way to ensure that we really close the gap, especially the racial wealth gap in this country. It's not sustainable long term. We can't really do that. You know, I believe, you know, if we do that, we'll be one of those third world countries and many of those third world countries where you have a very small people on the top doing extremely well and the majority of people are not. We don't want to do that. And I think we're seeing more and more of that with the price of rent, the price of buying a house. I mean, there are people currently who are making over $100,000 that cannot buy a house in Boston. That's crazy. That's just like when you think about it, it's like, yeah, are you kidding? It's crazy. Yeah. They are renting. They are renting as opposed to buying a house. Not because they don't have the will to do that. It's because it's just not attainable. So I think companies need to do more of an effort to really close that wealth gap. And when I'm talking about wealth gap, you know, again, many people are suffering, Black, white, Latinos. And I'm focusing on this on Black and brown because that's where the gap is wider. I mean, I'm saying, especially when we think about women and women of color. Wow. I mean, when you look at some of the statistics, it's like, holy cow, this is crazy. You know, that we're not where we're supposed to be. And more of them need to be done, more focusing on closing the wealth gap and do more in terms of bringing, you know, different people in the organization that look different like them, kind of like make it happen. You know, I believe we do a lot of conversation about talking about the problem, but not pushing for the solution. I think to me, I felt that we talk about the problem enough. You know, we got to do the action of do more, of make sure that your organization is more equitable, of paying attention to people, of making sure that you pay attention to what people are thinking about, you know, how you can make people's life better in organization. That's what I always think. I think about organization, business, of value creation, you know, value creation in all sense, not value creation in terms of more money, you know, value creation, make sure that people's lives are better. Make sure people feel proud, say, you know what? I work for this organization and I feel so happy. I was a part of this organization. You know, I was so happy. I was able to send my kids to school. I was able to take care of my family. I was able to buy a house. I was able to put them in the right path. I think we have to do more of that as a company.
You know, Herbie, we talked earlier last week about how positive you are, how optimistic you are. And that clearly comes through in this conversation. When you think about yourself and your career or life in general, what's some of the best advice that you have ever been given?
Wow. I would say the best advice that I have been given is stay the course. You know what I'm saying? And that's where my positivity came from. You know, no matter how hard things, no matter how tough things, now whether it's a business decision or new clients or getting new clients or trying to get new clients, hiring the best people, I just said, of course, even in my answers earlier about like, well, it's a journey. If you see it as a journey, then you set a course. So I was like, okay, let's move forward. Let's open the communication. Let's talk. Let's have a, you know, listen to people and just stay the course. So I will say to me, that's one of my best. I always stay the course. Stay the course. It's going to be fine. Let's just keep moving. You know, I will say stay the course and move, right? Because we got to move, right? We can't be in stagnant in one position. It's always good to sort of get the next day, get the next move. Just, you know, it could be one action. It could be a half an action. We just got to do something, but understand that let's stay the course. Don't give up. Because I think even when you look at the history of this country, even, you know, all of this racial issue we have in, we just got to stay the course as a country, as a community, as people. We know sometime promise was done, was not given, but we also know that this country has improved. Mm-hmm. Not to the expectation we wanted to, not to the speed that it should be, but the country's better. So if we set a course, we know we'll get there and we got to keep pushing.
That's great advice, especially to the next generation of executives. Do you have anything that you would add your best advice on what you tell those who are mentoring or employees who are coming up who maybe aspire to be LeBron James? Be able to do all things. What's your best advice?
I think my best advice is, you know, I almost feel that relationship is important to me. You know, I feel that one of the way I always tell people that's come to me, people I'm mentoring, I always tell it's like, don't look at things from a transactional perspective. Always kind of from a relationship perspective. When you do things from a relationship perspective, so we both invested to each other's wins, right? Each other's success. As opposed to transactional, I almost feel that, and I will get these mentees come to me, and you can tell they're like very transactional. Say, give me the recipe and I can be happy. Give me the recipe that I can go away from you. I will not call you only about the recipe. And I always kind of like tell people, listen.
We're all looking for that recipe.
We're all looking for that recipe. Whether it's like weight loss and whatever, we're like, let me get the recipe. And that's it. And I tell people, it's about relationship. It's about, don't look at it from a transactional perspective. You know, my thing to people will be like, whatever you do, don't look at from a transactional perspective. Look at it from a relationship. How do you build lasting relationship that all of us win? How do you build something that you know that it's, and I tell even people, I will tell that. I say even people, mentees, people that I mentor, I see tremendous amount of learning for me. As much as I'm telling them to do something. So to me, I see that as a two-way thing. It's like, okay, great. I'm going to mentor someone. Yes, I know I'm going to give them my time, but I'm also going to learn from them. You know, it's not transaction to me. It's like, well, meet me 11 to 12 and that's it. And I never talk to you again. So, you know, so I think if young people and people that's coming up or people in a leadership or organization see this way, I think they will really see a different outcome about life in general and how that journey could be like such a phenomenal journey.
Yeah, I think that is so compelling. I've had that conversation recently using that exact word that in some ways the last 2 years has made us more transactional in our communications, you know, because it's come on the screen at this time. So that's a really great point. So when you think about looking ahead a little bit, you know, there's so much happening in the world, in the country, in our city, technology, discoveries, new companies. What do you think the future holds for our city here in Boston?
Again, my optimist mindset as well, I think the future looks very bright for our community. And the reason I'm saying that is because I think changes has a way of making great things happen. We have a new mayor coming on board. Even in my space of development, real estate development, we have a new planning chief come on board with great ideas, with new mindset, new way of doing things, not like the last way wasn't a good way, just a new time. Just kind of seeing it, that kind of mindset to me is the future look very bright. And we also have, I believe we do have conscious people in this spot of leadership. What is the mayor of Boston? was the chief of planning, was a Sugan, who is a friend of many of us here. You know, these are phenomenal people that have great mindset that really want the right things to happen. So I feel so optimistic about the future. I think the future is going to be very bright. I also think that there is a, I won't call a mandate, but there is a desire, the desire for people to do more, for people to include more people. And I'm probably sure you probably see it, Caroline or Scott, from your organization. You probably see there's a tendency to do more, right? Before it was like, well, let's do diversity, let's do inclusion, let's do that. Now it's like, this is top of the list. You know, how could we do better? So that desire was not there before. I think this is good. And that's to our leaders as well. And even to the same thing from the state in general. I mean, wow, we're going to have a new governor. Again, you know, the current governor is a phenomenal person. We're going to have a new mindset, a new person who have new ideas that's going to bring us forward. I remember from Deval Patrick to Charlie Baker. You know, it was like, wow, it was a bright day with Deval Patrick and a brighter day with Charlie Baker. It's going to be a brighter day, whoever we get as a governor. So I think the future looks very bright for us. And I think with the leaders, the right people that we have, I think this is going to be really good.
Well, it's not surprising that you have a positive outlook, given what we've heard from you today. We've covered so many topics, and most of them have been quite serious. So let's have a little fun. We'd like to close with some rapid-fire questions. So off the top of your head, what are you currently reading or watching?
Okay. So I am reading and one of the best books I think I read in a long time called The Everyday Hero. I don't know if you guys know of it. It's by Robin Sharma. You know, Sharma.
We're both writing it down for our summer reading list.
Yes. You got to put that. Robin Sharma, Sharma, is a phenomenal book about life. And this time of that book really balanced me, really kind of keep me even keel, because he's got such a great idea, the way he sees things, the way he sort of his mindset, the way, I mean, it's just a phenomenal book. And you won't guys believe it. I get it in a center, in one of those Yankee swap, one of the Yankee swap. I got this book, which is interesting. And I was like, oh, you know, and I've left it for a while and don't read it. All of a sudden I picked this book. I'm like, this is, I don't know why I should have written that book a long time. And the person actually that gave it in that particular Yankee swap, the person will tell us about the gift. And then he said that was a really great book for him. And I was like, I didn't have time.
You didn't believe him.
I didn't believe him. I'm like, oh man, I just don't want the time to read, you know. And I
looked at it. So Everyday Hero
what it's called. Everyday Hero.
So speaking of an everyday hero, who is a Boston leader or an organization to watch that you're paying attention to?
Oh, geez. I was the organization. Beckma is one to watch for. I mean, I always like Beckma. I think they really, you know, we have a new leader over there that's sort of, you know, thinking different ways and doing good stuff. And that's an organization to watch for, because I think that organization, even though they have done a lot, they have a long way to go. I will say a leader to watch for, I will say Tanisha Sullivan. I think, you know, some of you might know her.
Tanisha Sullivan,
yep. Yes, she was overseen at NAACP. She's running for office, but it's one of those leaders. He's just kind of, you know, like the other one that I think, you know, again, I got more than just one. The other one is my brother from the MLK. He was one of the top 50.
Amari Paris Jeffries from
Jenny. Oh, you got to watch. This is, you know, I see these leaders, they're young, and I'm like, I can't wait to see 20 years what they're going to become. They're going to be phenomenal. You know, that's how I'm just like excited. These are very, it's like, oh man, you know, you want a speed time. You're like, I can't wait when I'm 70 years old, just like read about him, you know? So these are the people I'm thinking, the phenomenal people.
And also, I know they'll be humbled and honored that you called them out, and also that you referred to them as young.
Oh, yeah, I mean, they're young, but I'm just like, this is great. I can't wait to see them.
All right. Speaking of favorites, how about a favorite spot in the city?
You know what? I love New Bend Square. I love New Bend Square. I just love New Bend Square. I've been Dudley Cafe a couple of times. I don't know if you guys been there. It's a nice spot. It's a great place. It's also a place that I can see so many great things going to happen by the bowling building. There's a project to have a jazz there. You know, again, I'm an investor as a side note of this. I'm just going to see this place. It's going to be phenomenal. It's going to be nice, with vibrant with people and in multicultural, which is going to be nice. You know, it's not going to be one of those places everybody leave. I believe it's going to be multicultural. So I'm excited about this.
We know cybersecurity, professional development, training, and economic development are all serious topics and serious business that you're involved in. What makes you laugh and how do you let loose?
Oh, geez. You know, my kids make me laugh. You know, I get, you know, my kids make me laugh. And one of my son, my younger one, he's just a funny young man. You know, he's 10 now. And, you know, he does things that just like make me laughing because I just realized I was him. You know, my wife always said, wow, it's like little Herbie. It's a little Herbie. It's like a little Herbie. You know, so it's just like, and my wife didn't know when I was little. She's just like, it's a little Herbie. Yes, it's just a little Herbie. So anytime my wife said that and every time I see his face, I just smile and laugh and see how lucky I am to have them. So
that's wonderful. And finally, how about a wish for Boston?
I think a wish for Boston is this is one of these time and moment that we have an opportunity to get it right. And my wish is we get it right. I think we have enough leaders around the table. We have a desire to get it right. We have a desire to move the city forward and solve some of the big problem we have, whether it's sustainability issues, housing crisis, the racial inequality. I think my wish is we just got to get it right.
It's excellent.
Well, that's a great note to end on.
Absolutely.
Herbie, thank you so much for joining us.
I thank you both for your time with me, for giving me the forum to talk and have this opportunity to tell you my story. And I know as an immigrant, you know, there's a lot of these stories out there, but just the fact that you give me the opportunity to be there and talk to you, I really had a great time doing that.
We really appreciate your insights and your positive outlook. And just, you know, I go back to what your mother said, right? It's going to be okay. I love it.
It's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. Awesome.
And that wraps up another episode. I'm Saskia Epstein.
And I'm Carolyn Jones. And this is PNC C-Speak, the language of executives. Our guest today was Herbie DuVernay, CEO of Windwalker and founder of Rise Together. You've been listening to PNC C-Speak, the language of executives. This podcast and other engaging episodes can be found at bizjournals.com/Boston. Search PNC. Come back soon and join us for another PNC C-Speak.